You're listening to GNU World Order episode question mark season question mark well season 11 episode question mark. So this is an announcement that I'm making, and I'm not really sure what's going to come of it, but we'll find out. So I've traditionally, historically, since pretty much the beginning of this show, and I've been doing this show for a while now, I've sort of done these episodes where it's kind of, I do the intro music, and then I do a little bit of a teaser, what I call it a teaser. It's not really a teaser, but yeah, it's a teaser. And then I go into a topic, and then I do the coffee break, and then I, you know, so there's like this rhythm to the show. And that's pretty much worked for me for a long time. I mean, I've been happy with it. But lately, I've kind of realized or begun to suspect that locking myself into that specific pattern has actually made it more difficult for myself to get shows out, because I keep thinking, well, I can't release a show yet because I don't have three segments of about 45 minutes each, and it just doesn't, you know, I can't do it yet. So then I'll wait until another segment gets recorded, and then maybe I'll wait till I get a chance to stitch them all together and upload them. And it takes a long time. It's a fairly long production cycle. And typically, like, if I've got, you know, an entire day during the week where I can just say, okay, well, today is going to be my GNU World Order recording day, then that's when it gets done. And it can happen pretty much all at once. I'll gather up all the thoughts that I've been having, sort of try to whip them into shape, record, upload, convert, upload, and that's it, and that's done. Lately, that just hasn't been happening, just because of work schedules and life schedules and everything that I'm doing. It's just that dedicated time for recording has not happened reliably each week, which is why, for the past year, probably, GNU World Order has been sort of a monthly, maybe bi-monthly type of show, which, as I sort of sat around and thought about it and was listening to some other shows, and I kind of realized, you know, the thing about a podcast is that it's reliable, or that it's reliably released, that you can kind of predict at some point this thing is going to come out, you know, this month or this week. You know, I'm going to get a copy of that show in my inbox or in my podcatcher, and then that's part of my listening routine. So by having a show that sort of releases once or every other month, it makes it kind of difficult on listeners to really latch onto the show and to get invested in it. And frankly, I'm shocked and just chuffed that people have been following, you know, have hung on this long, because I still get email about the show, and I every time I get something, I think, wow, that's really cool. Someone is still listening to the show. How flattering. So, in other words, I feel like I owe it to my listeners, both current and future, to try to do something with a little bit more predictability involved. So what I'm going to try to do is I'm going to release segments as they're recorded. So I don't know what this is going to make the episode number hopefully jump up a lot. You know, like in my mind, I was releasing every 2 weeks, and I would do that until I hit about 20 episodes, and then I would take a break, and then I'd give it a new season designation, and then I'd continue. And that just hasn't really exactly been working out for me. So what I'm going to do instead is I'm going to try to record fairly, I don't want to say quick, because they won't necessarily be quick, but they will be self-contained segments. They will be thoughts that I've been having, something that I've wanted to comment on or educate someone about, and I will record that just as I usually do. I probably won't slap on beginning music, because it seems like a little bit of a waste to put beginning music, and then maybe I will, I don't know. Maybe some tone. At the beginning, have the segment, and then the end, and then I'll just post it. Just post it. And I'm going to shoot for getting a segment online every week. That's the theory. That's the goal. Whether or not it'll happen, I don't know. But that's the new strategy I've decided to try out. Now, along with that, I've also been thinking, and you can please tell me what you think about this idea, but I may be switching the podcast audio format, the file format, from the current Aug and Speaks to just Aug and Opus. Not just, to Aug and Opus. So two feeds, but instead of Speaks, switching to Opus. And then I was thinking about that a little bit, and I thought, wow, what if I just had one feed and it was just Opus? So that's kind of the area that I'm asking you, my dear listeners, for feedback about. Would Opus work for you if I just abandoned both Aug and Speaks and just went Opus? Maybe I should just go Aug and Opus? I don't know. I kind of feel like Opus has made a lot of traction, and it's kind of a big deal. I mean, it's part of the official spec for VP9, which is the big WM format that a lot of places are using. We used it at Weta Digital, even, to do a lot of stuff. A lot of the 4K renders were output to VP9, so a WebM file for the dailies. So, yeah, Opus, I feel, has made a lot of traction. I feel like a lot of devices ought to play it, but I could be wrong. I could be living in my own little Klaatu bubble and just thinking, well, all three devices that I have access to will play it after a fashion, so surely everyone will play it. So let me know what you think about that, if you have any thoughts or opinions. And otherwise, yeah, let's try this. Let's try some short episodes every week. See what happens. It may fail miserably. But that's what we're going to go for, starting right now. Here's some listener feedback. This is from Josh Cox over at webhosting.coop, which I should actually talk about. Webhosting.coop is a very, very cool project, but not yet. First listener email. So he says, I could not agree with you more on your recent assessment of artists who claim to be designers who need an OS that does not allow them to design it in any way. That is, of course, in reference to what I was speaking about in the previous episode, where I was kind of complaining about people saying that they needed a Mac to do their artwork, for instance. And you know, the more I think about that, it's going to annoy me no matter what forever, but the more I think about it, the more I realize that a little bit of understanding or maybe just kind of some care is needed when even just thinking about that, much less encountering it in a real-life person. And one of those things is, and unfortunately they don't make it easy, because people tend to argue this point pretty adamantly. But, I mean, I've told you guys, and if you've been around the show for a very long time, you'll know it firsthand, because season zero of this very podcast, the one that you're listening to right now, started out as a very pro-Mac podcast. It was absolutely, totally Macintosh-centric, and it was very, very excited about being Macintosh-centric. And, I mean, luckily by the end of that initial season, season zero, I'd switched to Linux. And the reason that it might seem that there was this sort of, like, turning on a dime moment for me was that there was this sort of turning on a dime moment for me. I had heard of Linux a long time ago. Stop me if I've told you this before. I'd heard of it vaguely, but I just did not understand that it was something that it could apply to someone who didn't mess around with PCs. And again, PCs, in my view at that time, was anything that was not a Mac. And PC meant it shipped with, you know, it was a Microsoft thing. And I didn't understand that there was anything but Microsoft and Mac. Even though I had heard of Linux, I just assumed Linux was something having to do with the other people, you know, the people who weren't Mac users. And I was a Mac user, so it just didn't make a difference to me. So if you had possibly approached Klaatu, you know, back in 2006 or 8 or whatever year that was, quite possibly I would have argued with you, and I may have said, yes, well, I need a Mac. Because I don't think I actually would have, because I remember one time very, very clearly. I was looking through, like, this catalog or something, like one of those handouts that you get at a store, you know, like the circulars, the sales. And I was desperate because I was super poor at the time, like desperately poor, but I needed a new computer in order to get my work done. I mean, it's arguable whether I needed to do that work because it wasn't really making me any money, but I thought that at some point it would make me money. So I thought that I needed a computer in order to do that work. And I just thought, well, what's my option? Like, I can't afford a new Mac, and all of these computers in this store are Windows. Like, I just couldn't, in that one moment, for the first time in my life, it just didn't even make any sense to me that there were only two options. It just seemed like such an aggressively anti-consumer stance for an industry to have. It's just like, you can have this one or that one, and one of them super expensive and one of them is a lot more variable, but it ships with software that is horrible and you would never want to ever use. And again, this is back in 2000, like 6 or 8 or whatever it was, let's say 6. So it would have been, you know, worse possibly. I mean, like really, really old, bad stuff on both ends of the spectrum, but either way, I did not want to go down the path of Windows, so I just really couldn't figure out why there wasn't something else. And this at the same time, like, I'd already heard of I'd heard of Linux before, you know, so and it just never clicked. Like, it was just you could have slapped me, and I just didn't get it. So I think that there is a spectrum there for people, or not a spectrum, a gradient, like a process even, for people. Like, they have to hear of Linux, and then they have to internalize that Linux isn't something that only geeks use, or it's not just something that vegans use. And when I say vegans, I mean, you know, annoying people who, like, I'm a Linux user, and you're like, oh, all I said was, like, do you want fries with your shake, you know? It's just like, oh, I'm a Linux user. And it's just like, okay, well, I didn't ask you anything about anything. You know, just people like you and me, essentially, who go out and just talk about Linux all the time to people, the annoying people, you know? And yet, people like you and me, the annoying people who talk about Linux all the time, are kind of necessary, because how else are people going to hear about Linux, right? So it's like this weird catch-22 to be a fanatic about Linux. And so once people hear about it, then they have to kind of internalize, okay, well, this is actually something that does apply to me. I could actually use Linux. Oh, I have to go through the learning curve. Oh, do I want to do that? Is it worth it? Yes, it is. Okay, now I'm a Linux user. And it takes a while to get there, and it's a tough process to get through, both for the user as well as for the enthusiast, you know? It's hard to introduce people to Linux a lot of times, you know? You really have to sort of let them come around to the Linux way of thinking. And it takes a while, because we're so used to everything having to be marketable and everything having to be out to beat the competition and all this, you know, all these things that we want, or not that we want, but that we need to see in computers, for instance. We just have to see the world in that way. So it is understandable, in other words, that people don't get that they could use anything but a Mac for their artwork, because it's such a leap of faith to imagine that there's a computer out there that doesn't belong to somebody else. Okay, so then Josh says, furthermore, on the blockchain, Bitcoin is indeed SHA-256 based, or at least he thinks it is. I mean, I don't know that it isn't. He just says, I believe. He believes that it is. And this is what gave rise to the industry of ASIC-designed miners, special-built hardware that hashes SHA-256 in order to mine. So, in other words, he's kind of talking about the problem of specifically Bitcoin mining, where it's just such a thing now that I certainly don't see any realistic way for you or me, or, you know, a normal person who's kind of on the street and says, oh, I should get into Bitcoining, Bitcoin mining, there's just no way you're going to ever find a Bitcoin. You know, it's just not going to happen. And if it does, it's going to happen after you've invested thousands of dollars into your electricity bill to keep these servers crunching numbers. And that is a pity, because that puts the discovery process well out of hand of the normal person. But at the same time, I mean, that is part of what money is, right? So anyway, he says that there are, of course, other coins that exist that use other hashing algorithms, such as yacoin.org, that is yacoin.org, which uses an incrementing bit on the hash as the increase of difficulty. This is interesting in that ASIC hardware will not be viable till very big bit difficulties. So it's kind of keeping that whole mining craze in check, I think. That's pretty interesting to me. I would say, on the whole issue of cryptocurrency, it interests me insofar as its original intent, at least as far as I knew, and I could be wrong about its intent. I didn't create it, so I could be wrong. But when I first heard about it, I thought that its intent was to create a money system that is wholly separate from the real world money system. Now that line has blurred now, because of course the bitcoins, you know, all the bitcoins have been mined. Not all, but lots of them have been. And so now the demand, today the demand is up. I don't know, it wasn't up, you know, a year ago. Now it is. You can get like one Bitcoin for something like $5,000 right now, or $7,000, something insane like that. It's a lot of money right now, a lot of real world money. So you've got this split of, you know, am I getting Bitcoin because I want Bitcoin, or am I getting Bitcoin as an investment so that I can then sell it on the Bitcoin market for actual paper money? That process, while not wrong, is just less interesting to me, because I think, I mean, it's a money system, so people investing in it to then resell it, that sort of thing, you know, people playing on inflation and supply and demand, I guess. That's kind of normal, and I imagine it kind of goes with the territory. And that's the part that does not interest me as much, because now it seems very much like paper money to me. It's not as intriguing. I think if anything, I would be more interested in cryptocurrency that was trying to alter the way that we interact with the currency that we choose to use. So for instance, what if we had, and this is off the top of my head, I haven't thought this through and I'm not an economist, but like, what if we had like a pool of cryptocurrency, and if you use a service from some website, then you give them an inspiration point, or whatever we're calling these encryption currencies, these fake ones that I just made up. And if you provide a service, then obviously you receive, and people are using it, then you receive the inspiration point or whatever. So you've got wealth depending upon your participation in the community, essentially. So if you give something, then you get, and if you get something, then you give. And it would be interesting, maybe possibly, to see where the wealth got divided up in a system designed around that. You know, would Linus Torvalds be super super rich in fake cryptocurrency because he's giving us all the kernel, or would he be poor in cryptocurrency even though we're all running his kernel? But you know, the person who made that really fun indie game is really rich right now. You know, like, it would just be, I'd be interested to see kind of how that played out. And it would have to be a voluntary thing, I would imagine. Like, it wouldn't be something that if you go to a site, your stash gets decremented. It's who you want to invest in or whatever. So yeah, something like that. I don't know. Again, that's off the top of my head, and I'm just trying to separate it from the, you know, and there would be no ostensibly, there would be no real world value to this cryptocurrency. There, you would not, and obviously you couldn't control this, but you couldn't sell it on the paper money market because of reasons, and so it would be a system, a sort of self-contained system, and obviously I'm sure that's not possible or reasonable or even desirable, but that sort of thing would interest me more than a cryptocurrency that kind of flirts with paper money, just because that's where it starts to break down for me. I just don't care about the paper money stuff. I really don't. So, yeah, a big topic, though, a really, really interesting thing. And Yacoin.org looks kind of interesting, too, based on his description anyway. I think probably my interests in cryptocurrency are starting to lean toward the not the Bitcoins. I mean, the Bitcoins are interesting because it is a thing that is, at you know, in terms of cryptocurrency, it's pretty darn widely adopted, and so there's definitely an interest there, you know, because it is possibly the thing that you can actually in real life use on a widespread basis, whereas something smaller, I think you would have to see, you'd have to look around you and kind of establish, is my community or my social circle, are we all going to use cryptocurrency together? Yes. Which one are we going to use? Oh, Yacoin? Okay, let's do this. And that's the only way it would make any sense for you, right? Because otherwise you have cryptocurrency and nothing to do with it. So, yeah. So yeah, there are lots of things to be interested in there, but for different reasons for me, lots of different reasons. So that was Josh's email, and before I close this segment out, I'm going to go ahead and mention webhosting.coop, which is exactly, well, not exactly how it sounds, but webhosting.coop. I usually think of co-op, but co-op. Coop, webhosting.coop, and this is a. He told me about this a long time ago, and he probably thinks I'm a jerk for never having mentioned it. But it's a really cool association, I guess. It's a cooperative association, and it is a web hosting company that is nonprofit. Yeah, not for profit cooperative web hosting. It's $100 a year to start, so I don't know what that gives you off the top of my head, haven't looked at it in a long time, but it's a server, it's hosting, you can put your website on it. So if you think, GoDaddy or HostGator or whoever the current big one is, I don't even know, that's what this is, webhosting.coop. So that's pretty appealing to me, and the reason I'm not on webhosting.coop yet is that I have lots of accounts in other places still, and once those expire, I will probably be going to webhosting.coop, because the nonprofit part of that really, really appeals to me, and I don't know how they do it. I mean, they obviously have a staff and stuff, so, you know, nonprofit always is like this weird sort of, well, what do you mean profit? And I guess they mean profit. Like they cover their operational costs, and they provide the service. But what's really neat too is that well, I know from knowing Josh as I do, they, you know, their staff knows what they're doing. I would feel comfortable saying that, because I know Josh from. It's been years since he and I have been talking back and forth just via email. I don't think we've met in real life, but also they're quite, I guess, transparent in the decisions that they make and what they do. Now, not being a member of this co-op, it's not like I have real experience. I'm not saying that I haven't been to their little, you know, town hall forums and voted on things or anything like that, so I'm not speaking from experience, but from what he has told me about the organization, you know, they do everything pretty much with full transparency. They communicate to their users. They have really, really good support. And they support a lot of good causes. So, yeah, webhosting.coop, probably something to check out if you're in the market for a web host. Definitely worth looking at. And, yeah, I'll be on there eventually. I just have to wait for the current contracts that I've got. Or not contracts, but, you know, you sign up with a place for hundreds of dollars for the next 10 years, and you don't really just want to walk away from that. That would be silly. So, yeah, I'm just waiting for things to expire, and then I'll probably move over. So, yeah, webhosting.coop. Thank you for the email, Josh.